So today's December.
Is that fan making noise?
Oh, it's fine. This is a what do you call it? A omnidirectional. No, no. The mic is key to pick up the human voice. It's fine.
Okay, it doesn't pick up noises.
I mean, it does, but it'll be fine.
Because I can shut it off.
If you needed to keep warm, you do what you need to do to stay comfortable. So we left off in 1980. You wrapped up your story of the final European trip you and Shannon made. Yes. But you skipped something important, and that was you talked about being in East Berlin and calling Mary Lynn, but we didn't actually discuss how you two met.
Oh, okay. Well, that would have been 79, November.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, are we ready?
Yeah.
Okay, I met Mary Lynn in November of 1979 when I came out to California to run a recruitment booth for the Army. Actually, there were sergeants who did all the real work. And what it was a VICA convention.
VICA?
Industrial Clubs of America. I'm not sure what the V stands for. And there were lots and lots of industrial teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And our thinking was, okay, we'll show up, we'll talk to those teachers, explain to them that the Army is a good alternative for the kids when they're looking for a job after graduation from VICA. And if they have trouble, or if they're just really not sufficiently trained, they can join the Army and we will continue their education. Let's say an electrician. Okay, you're going to learn the basics in VICA, but they need more than the basics, and they needed more than the basics. They need some advanced training. So that's why we were there. We're not trying to recruit the teachers. We're trying to show the teachers that there was a viable alternative for their students.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the first day, I believe, was a Thursday. That was setup day. And we set up the booth. And then sometime in the afternoon, and the show didn't start until Friday, but sometime in the afternoon, I went over to the snack bar with the sergeant I'd brought with me from Washington, D.C. And I'm standing in line in the snack bar, and I look over to my left, and I see this tall, long-legged, very good-looking blonde. I thought, she's pretty. And as far as I could tell, she did not have a ring on her left hand. It was her left side was facing me. Mm-hmm. I didn't see a ring. But she was at the singer sewing machine booth.
Right.
So I came to the table with whatever I had, coffee and donuts, I don't remember. And there were a bunch of singer guys there because they had their little badges on. So after introductions all the way around, I glanced over at her and I said, that lady over there, the blonde, long-legged, is she tied up? Is she married? You guys know?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, not anymore. She was very recently divorced. So what's her name? Mary Lynn Delaney. Okay.
Good Irish name.
Good Irish name. So then she came to the table, and one of the fellows introduced the two of us, and I just kind of, and one by one they left the table until it was just the two of us. So I was telling her.
Were you in uniform?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I was telling her why I was there and what we were offering the VICA people.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought that was very interesting. So I invited her, well, come on down to my booth. It's number whatever it was, 247 down this hallway and then go to aisle 200 and turn left, and it's right there. So we stood up to part, shook hands, and I went on down to 247. Oh, I was there probably 15 minutes when she shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanted to see what your booth looked like. Okay. So we chatted some more, and then she said, well, I've got to get back to work. And in the meantime, she had told me what she was doing for Singer, which was she had the whole state of Arizona, the schools. And she would go from school to school throughout the state, teaching girls how to sew, and then trying to sell sewing machines to the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Because here was an occupation for the young women. Apparently, she was quite successful at it. I mean, I don't know how I guess you measured by the number of sales made, but from what I gathered, what she said and what the other men said was that she was quite good at what she was doing. Okay. So that was Thursday, and the convention opened Friday. And sometime during the day Friday, maybe twice, she came down. Yeah, how you doing? Doing okay. What's with you? So just chit-chat. And then Saturday, pretty much the same thing. And Sunday, pretty much the same thing.
Okay.
Now it's getting late in the afternoon, and everything is getting ready to be torn down. And I thought, you know, if I don't make a move now, I'll never see her again.
Because you knew she lived in Phoenix.
Yes.
And you were still in Maryland.
I was in Maryland. So I went over to her and I said, would you like to go to a Christmas party? She said, what do you mean? She said, well, I have an older sister who lives down in Newport Beach who is having an early Christmas party for me.
Hmm.
And it's tonight.
That would be Jan.
Jan, right. And it's just, you know, because I can't be there for Christmas, she's having this party for me. She said, well, just the two of us? And I said, no, the sergeant's going too. So she asked the other people, and basically they said, oh, that nice young man in uniform, sure, go with him.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked her up at the sports bar in her hotel. And she was there expounding on the fine points of football.
Right.
And the men around her, when I sat down next to her, basically what the guy said was, man, you're lucky. This woman knows more about football than we do. Well, that's because she had four sons, all of whom played football.
Right.
So we got up to leave, and she said, where's the sergeant? And I said, couldn't make it the last minute. And I could see the hesitation. I said, it's my sister's place. Okay. So she went there.
So I have to know. Was there actually a sergeant?
Yes, there was. Oh, yeah.
Okay. All
yeah,
right.
Really was. Yeah, I'd brought him out with me from D.C. Anyway, what am I missing here?
So you went to Jan's place.
We did. Oh, but first I called Jan. And I said, is it okay if I bring a date? And she said, oh, I had arranged a date for you.
Ew.
So I said, I'd really rather bring this lady, because I didn't know who the person was that she had arranged for.
That sounds like Jan.
Yeah. So we got there. Took a little longer than I thought, because I wasn't aware of the horrible traffic from the convention center down to Newport Beach.
Right.
We got there a little bit late, but we got there. And it was a fun party. You know?
Nice.
There were some nice people, some of them neighbors, some friends.
I was actually invited to that party because I was in school at UCLA by that time, but I couldn't make it.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Well, I don't know if it was a sincere invitation. because Jan knew I probably couldn't make it.
I think Jan would have given you a sincere invitation.
Fair enough.
Anyway, so, and this other woman, I can see her talking to Jan, and she glares at Mary Lynn.
Oh, dear, that was the date.
Yeah. But I was quite pleased with my date, and I didn't need two. And we stayed, I don't know how late, but we stayed. And then finally, it was time to go. So I took her back to her hotel, got her telephone number and address in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And we parted, and we kissed. Goodness.
How about that?
How about that? So I went back to my hotel, and then the next morning I left. I assume she did too, with all the singer people. Went back to Maryland. This was November, or early December. I think it was probably the 2nd of December.
Okay.
1979. So I went back to my place, and I had an 800 number.
Yes, I remember. I used to call you on that. And
she could call me free.
Mm-hmm.
She did. She called me several times free.
Mm-hmm. This is back. For the kids listening, this was back when phone calls were not ubiquitous, and if you made any call outside of your area, it cost a lot of money. So having an 800 number was a big deal.
And they were expensive.
Right.
Cross-country calls.
Right.
So, yeah, having that 800 number was very fortunate. All right. So, you know, she called several times, and we just chatted. And then in February, I had to come back out. Actually, I went to Hollywood, where we made a recruiting tape.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a good friend who I knew was running the booth at the convention center, or where may not have been the convention center, but because why would we be there within 3 months? That didn't make sense.
Yeah.
So it was somewhere down in Orange County, and I get there looking for my friend, and lo and behold, there's a singer booth. So I went up to the singer booth,
mm-hmm.
and I said, do you happen to have Mary Lynn Delaney here? I said, yes, she's here. Where is she right now? Well, they weren't sure where she was, maybe going to the ladies' room, something like that.
Right.
So I couldn't stay, but I came back later in the day, and she was very grateful to see me. So I suggested we go out to dinner.
So let me hold on. So you two had been in touch via phone, but you didn't know that you were both going to be at this same conference
I
in
did
Southern
not.
California.
Nor did she.
Right.
Okay. So
went out to dinner.
Before we went to dinner, we went by to see Kevin and Julie.
Right.
Because Dustin was practically an infant. I mean,
he was a baby.
Babe in arms. Yes, he was a baby. And I had not seen him yet.
Right.
So I took her with me to see Dustin. I explained before we got there that it's my grandson, first grandson. And she was cool with that. Then I introduced Kevin and Julie to Mary Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to dinner. And during the course of the dinner, I said, well, how many of these have you gone to for singer? Two.
Hmm.
I said, okay. What and where and when is the next one? And she said, it's in San Francisco. And I said, not the NSBA,
mm-hmm.
National School Board Association. She said, yes. How about that? We were going to be there,
mm-hmm.
and I was going to run the booth again.
Mm-hmm.
So I suggested that we make arrangements to get together, which we did, and wound up in the same hotel room.
We'll leave it at that.
Had a wonderful time in San Francisco. then it was time to leave. And I had taken some leave time because I wanted to go up and see Bo and who else is up? Not sure where Kevin was then. I know he was north of San Francisco, I think in Marin County. Kevin?
Kevin was still down in, he and Julie lives.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay. So I'm not sure. It might have been Chris and Colleen.
Yeah.
That's who it was.
Yeah.
So I called them and said, can you handle a visitor, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I went by to see them. In the meantime, I'd also contacted Bo, and he was delighted for me to come up. So drove up there. And, you know, that place isn't exactly the most exciting community in the world.
In Dogpatch, no.
In Dogpatch.
Yeah.
So after 2 days, I was getting bored. So I called. She'd given me the number of her. She told me she was going to Modesto where her parents live.
Right.
So I called, and we chatted for a minute, and I said, so what are you doing to keep busy? And she said, I am bored to tears. I said, so am I. What if I came down and got you and then brought you back up here in the mountains?
She could be bored with you.
Yes. And she thought that was a pretty good idea. So she said, I'm not sure my parents will approve of me going off with you like that. She's over 40.
Yes, I was going to point out here. You're 45, she's 43 in that neighborhood.
Yeah. But I brought Bo down with me.
Okay.
And
you're your older brother, your chaperone.
Yeah, yes. And in a rental car, I had a rental car.
Mm-hmm.
So he met the parents too, and we sat around for a little while. I think Ruby fixed us some coffee and donuts.
Marilyn's
like
parents are Ruby and Floyd.
Floyd, yeah. They're both gone now.
Yeah.
And we had a nice little conversation with them. In the meantime, Marilyn had already packed.
Mm-hmm.
So we took our leave of the parents and headed back up north. And we left the impression with the parents that we were going to stay at Bo's house.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't. Took him home, kissed him goodbye.
Right.
And what's his wife's name? Yvonne. And then we headed to Reno.
Uh-huh.
Where we stayed a couple of days and a couple of nights. And then finally it was time to leave there. So I put her on a plane back to Phoenix. And I caught a plane back to D.C., and that was basically it. That was February. And a couple of months later, I called her and I said, have you ever seen a TV commercial made? No.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to? I guess so. I said, okay, here's the deal. This was April.
Okay.
I said, in June, I'm going to Nebraska, western Nebraska, where that funny-looking mountain is that showed, well, it was a split between the Oregon Trail and the Trail to California. And the reason we went there is because the local National Guard unit had a cadre, it was bigger than that. Let's just say a unit of guys who dressed in authentic Civil War uniforms. Authentic.
Are these reenactors?
Well, they're guardsmen.
Oh, okay.
And they put on performances riding horses,
mm-hmm.
and they whoop and holler through town and things like that. And it was described to me, and I said, yeah, and the script, I had approved the script already. So I said, this looks like it's going to be fun. Except we had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning because we wanted to film with the sun not quite up yet.
Mm.
and these guys charging out of the rising. Well, it hadn't even risen yet.
Right, right.
And we had to do it several times. I don't know that we had to, but we did. Because the director was meticulous and he wanted to get it right. And I think he did. I think he did a pretty good job. So we did that, and then the next morning we got up for the rest of the commercial, which was people making a camp, and they were supposedly headed toward Oregon on the Oregon Trail. So we finished in 2 days. We had to get up at 3 again. Finished in 2 days.
Did you have a scene around a campfire where they were eating beans?
Did I what?
Did you have a scene around a campfire where they were eating beans?
Oh, I forgot. I had sent a ticket to Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked her up at the Denver airport, and there was Brother Bill. Have you ever met Brother Bill?
I don't remember. Yeah.
Now Bill makes 6 figures a year.
Mm-hmm.
He's in stocks and bonds where he sells larger amounts to investors, not just individual investors, but a group of investors who pool their money and buy these stocks and bonds that he arranges a sale and takes a commission off the top. He is making hand over fist money. He was at the airport. He looked like a hippie. Very much like a long, scraggly hair. Clothes that were, put it mildly, were draped on him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just all of the signs of a totally rootless human being.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not impressed by Bill. Well, since then I have been, but because he changed his whole lifestyle.
Right.
I guess I'm not sure if it was fast or slow, but he did. He changed his whole lifestyle. Okay, so that took me back to Maryland. And this now is 1980.
Mm-hmm.
So Shannon comes back and we head off to Europe.
Right.
In fact, we went to Frankfurt.
So, the first time I met Mary Lynn was you invited me to come down with you. You guys were, the three of us met at the Disneyland Hotel. But I'm not sure where it was in there. Was it in 1979? Was it the next year? I'm thinking it's the 70. It was that year, that school year, 79.
It had to be because we never went back there.
Okay, so it was probably that second time.
Probably.
In whatever you said, March or February.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking maybe we did have two in a row because they were totally different conventions.
Yeah.
That's what it was. The Vicar the first time and then a different convention the second time.
Yeah.
So that's why we were there so with short turnaround time. Yes. Okay. All right, so Shannon and I take off for Europe, and you've heard the whole story there.
Right.
Including the phone call.
From East Berlin.
From East Berlin. Came back at the...
So at that point, when you call it from East Berlin, I mean, it sounds like you'd only seen each other...
Several times.
But still a handful.
November, February.
Mm-hmm.
April.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There were a couple of trips out west that I had to make, and just by coincidence, they all had to go through Phoenix.
Right, right. It's funny when you arrange your own itinerary.
Yes.
How that can happen.
Okay, so now I get back in late August, by 25th or something like that, and I'm barely back, and I get a phone call from her. And she said, I have never been east of the Mississippi River. If I came back to Washington, D.C., would you be my guide? Well,
this and you said you'd think about it.
Yeah. And of course. So she showed up right around the end of the month. I forget precisely, but right around the end of August, going into September. Now, have you ever been on the East Coast in September, early September?
I live in Virginia.
Oh, yes. Harvest time. Harvest moon and all
that.
So.
Yeah, yeah.
So she came back, and by this time, because of the incident in East Berlin when she was anxious and a few other things, I thought, and she had told me that there was a CPA in Phoenix who was laying it on her, trying to...
And so you had some competition.
I had some competition. So I thought, well, if I'm ever going to move, this is the time. So I went out and I bought a solitaire diamond ring and a little gold band.
Whoa.
And I picked her up. We went to dinner. My plan was to take her to the Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
So we headed over the Jefferson. Oh, my God. I read in the paper the next day there were 5,000 people there for some kind of function.
Hmm.
And I could see the crowd and the cars, and I thought, no, I don't want to propose marriage to this lady in front of 5,000 people.
Yeah.
So I turned to her and I said, let's go someplace else. Of course, she didn't know what I had in mind. I said, how about the Lincoln? Oh, my hero, my big hero. I thought,
Okay.
How about that?
All right.
So it was late in the evening. We headed over to Lincoln and found an easy parking place because
I'm going to guess you picked the Jefferson because I thought it would be less crowded than the others.
Yeah, I actually did, and plus he's my hero.
Oh, there you go.
So we get to the Lincoln and park close because there wasn't that many people there.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this is late at night now.
Yeah.
So we went up and we chatted with Abe for a while and then sat down on the, I'm assuming you've been there.
The Lincoln Memorial?
Yes.
I've been there many times, okay. Including with you.
So we sat on the top steps with our back to one of the fluted columns.
Mm-hmm.
And Abe, right, kind of more behind me than behind her, looking out on the
reflecting pool.
Reflecting pool, or the steps down the reflecting pool. Then the Washington Monument beyond that, Capitol building on the hill, and a full orange moon, a big one hanging in the sky.
Nice.
Kind of romantic. So after a little while, I reached into my camera bag and pulled out this package. It was wrapped and put it in her lap. She didn't notice it at first and finally said, what's this? And I said, well, why don't you open it? I said, it's something that I got in Rome for you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she unwraps it, and it's a jewelry box, marble jewelry box. And I said, go ahead and open it. And she opens it, and there's one of the smaller jewelry things. And she opened it, and it was a silver chain with the bas-relief of whoever the current pope was. And a little pendant, and you open that, and there's a miniature rosary inside. And I told her that this has been blessed by the Pope. She said, how do you know? Because I was in Vatican Square with my daughter, and he was out there blessing things, so I held it up. So it was blessed by the Pope. She was impressed by that. Then she put it back in, and here our stories differ slightly.
Mm.
Her story is she was putting the one back and she felt another box. My story is she went poking around to see if there was anything else in there, which there was. So I said, open it up. It's a solitaire diamond ring.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, what's this? Later she told me she thought it was a friendship ring.
Mm.
Yeah, solitaire diamond is a friendship, right?
You're a good friend.
So I slipped it on her left finger. And then I reached into my coat pocket, and I pulled out the gold band, and I said, it's a match set. If you accept that one, this one goes with it. And she realized what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And she cried. But she said yes.
There we go.
So that was our, what do you call it?
The proposal?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Smooth move. So then, okay, so she's living in Phoenix. You're living in Maryland. I know you eventually end up in Orange County, but...
No. Yeah, but the wedding was up at Lake Tahoe.
I know. I remember. Right. I was there.
So how did...
January 3rd, 1991. 81. I got married in 91. Yes. January 3rd, 1981. I was busy in college, so I'm a little unclear how all that happened.
Okay. Well, she gave me a list of people she was inviting, and I had my list, which was mostly family.
Mm-hmm.
Bo and Yvonne, Pat and Guy, some distant cousin. No, not distant. I think it was not Chrissy, the other daughter. Just died recently. Oh, you didn't know.
I'm sorry, who are we talking about?
We're talking about Colleen's daughter.
Oh, for the heaven's sakes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, me too. It'll you know what, I'll edit it in later.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a few other people. And so I started making arrangements. We had already picked the date, 3rd of January.
Mm-hmm.
So first thing I did was I just rented, I didn't rent it, but I reserved the entire motel.
Mm-hmm.
Where, and how did I find that motel? Oh, I got picked up a book from South Shore Lake. I had a book sent to me by the chamber, South Shore Lake Tahoe. And there were a whole bunch of places in there that would qualify that had wedding rooms. So I called this one and I explained what I wanted to do. And I said, I want to reserve your entire motel. And it had just barely more than enough rooms available. Well, they were very happy to reserve the hotel for me.
Sure.
So then I asked them give me a room list. In fact, send me a brochure showing your map, and I'll take care of it from there. But confirmed that, yes, I had reserved the entire hotel. And then she sent me a picture of a cake that she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked in that Chamber of Commerce book.
And back in these days, sending you a picture meant putting it in an envelope and mailing it to you.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And I sent it to the bakery. His bakery was listed, so I sent it to him. Told him when I wanted it and that I'd pick it up like the day before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or even that morning. And then Guy was one of these mail order ministers.
Right. That's right. That's right.
But they're legal.
Yeah,
they're legal.
Yeah, no, it's okay. You're referring to my uncle Guy Dork.
Yes,
Pat's husband, since departed.
And of course, he agreed to perform the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there was a there was a large room that was kind of like a meeting room for people. The balcony overlooked the lake.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided, okay, and the pictures showed it. Said, okay, we'll get married out on the balcony. We're all looking out, people inside, and Guy is looking toward us.
Right.
And I reserved that. Well, I had reserved the entire motel, and they had a party room, which I also reserved. So I took care of all those little details, everything you could think of. Called a champagne company or wine company and ordered how many bottles of champagne I thought were necessary. But I got them on consignment, which meant if we didn't open them, they could take them back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what else would there have been? Not much else. So then I sent a whole bunch of letters to people telling them where this motel was and assigning rooms, which I wrote on the map they sent me. Pat and Guy here, Bon Yvonne here, Lynn Mary Lynn's friend here. I just wrote him on the map,
mm-hmm.
and told him what room number and the address, how to find it. It was real easy to find. It was on the main drag of South Shore Lake Tahoe. And these were letters with stamps,
right,
to everyone who indicated that they were going to be there. And that left a couple of rooms left over, maybe four, just in case somebody else decided to show up. And sure enough, one of Mary Lynn's uncles showed up at the last minute.
Hmm.
Anyway, I flew to Phoenix, and then she and I and Lynn and some other friends flew up to South Shore Lake Tahoe, where I had a rental car waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And I drove the four or five of us to the motel and then waited for other people to show up. Everybody was booked the night before. So I booked it for the night before and the day of. And everybody was expected to pay their own room. I made that very clear. I said, I booked the rooms, but I'm calling on you to pay for it. That time of the year, holidays were over, prices were reasonable, and so there wasn't any problem. Then Colleen's daughter, Janet.
Janet Lee.
Yeah. Okay. Her daughter fell in love with the place. And she said, I want to get married here. She was getting married in about 6 months. I want to get married here. So I talked to the presumptive bridegroom and just briefly explained, you know, what was involved. You got to rent a place and things like that. Well, they did rent the same motel.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all they did that was right. Everything. Mm. She didn't make the plans on the cake. She didn't make the plans on the champagne. Nothing. And it was a total disaster because nothing was there following their wedding. No drinks, no food, nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, but that wasn't my fault, and I didn't worry about it. But anyway, the reason I keep mentioning champagne was after it was all over, and I guess maybe the next day, Kevin shows up with about four bottles of champagne. Hey, Dad, I rescued these. No, you didn't. I'm paying for them. So since I'm paying for them, I took them.
All right.
And eventually we drank them, but he thought he was doing me a huge favor.
So I was there for the wedding, but I do not remember how I got up there. I mean, I came up with Kathy and Shannon.
A bus?
You know, it's funny. I just am drawing a complete blank. I was in school. I didn't have a car. I probably took a bus up to the Bay Area and then...
Maybe rode with somebody.
Rode with somebody. Maybe I'm conflating trips. Were Keith and Francis there?
I don't remember, but they could have been.
They could have been, because I remember going someplace with Kathy and Shannon and Keith and Francis's RV, and that might have been.
They could have been there.
Yeah, that might have been it.
Okay. All right, let's take a break.
Oh.
I've got to dry my mouth, or wet my mouth. Mm-hmm. Okay, and if you can think of anything, any questions you want to ask, this is a good time.